welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Pyle. Today, we're going to be starting a mini-series focused on the trends at the brigade and below from each of the major combat training centers, or CTCs for short. This idea came from one of our listeners who commented on our Facebook page back in August 2025 asking about such a topic. I'm so thankful for all your feedback through your social media comments, emails, and word of mouth. That is how we continue to deliver you the most cutting-edge dialogue that means the most to you all. And what better place to begin this series than with the first CTC for the Army, the National Training Center at Fort Irwin, California, which started training units back in 1981 with a focus on Armored Brigade combat teams. While the focus is going to be on their sustainment side, we're going to explore some of the overall tips and tricks for units going to NTC and some insights for those who are going to be an observer coach trainer, or OCT for short. My guest today to guide this conversation is Lieutenant Colonel Eric Shockley, who is the Senior Tactical Sustainment Observer Coach Trainer of Gold Miner Team at NTC. Lieutenant Colonel Shockley is a native of North Carolina and joined the Army in 1999 as a parachute rigger. In 2005, he earned his commission through the ROTC Green to Gold program, where he graduated from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and in the Quartermaster Corps. He has served at Fort Bragg, Fort Riley, Fort Hood, JRTC, Fort Carson, and NTC with deployments to Iraq, Romania, and Poland. His years of experience in the tactical force and as an OCT are going to make for a great conversation today, and I'm just so thrilled and excited to get this conversation going. But on that, sir, welcome. So excited to have you here.
Hey, good morning, Garrett. I appreciate the invitation. Glad to be on the show. And really appreciative of what you're doing there, you know, between you and the rest of the team. And, you know, it really highlights the interactive dialogue we got to have to make things better. And so, like you mentioned, that comment that came from one of the listeners that's starting this conversation, I'm looking forward to hear what the other CTCs have to say. You know, we certainly don't necessarily have all the answers here at the NTC, but we like to provide our perspective. So looking forward to the conversation and then the follow-on episodes with the rest of the team.
Exactly, sir. I think that's what's going to be so nice about doing this as a mini series, because each of these CTCs has, like, we'll say, a different flavor or different, you know, all different focus. So it's going to be nice to see how these different trends every different CTC sees that. And kind of kick us off today. So I know, reading through your bio and your experience, you've been on both sides now. You've been in part of a training union, an RTU there. And you've also served as an OCT. So what is it like to be, you know, an RTU versus like an OCT when you're at a CTC?
I would say it's heavily dependent on the OC. And I guess I'll give some background there just for listeners, because they're, you know, as they go through rotations in the future, if they've done rotations in the past, it changes over time. So I think for all of them, they started out as observers / controllers. At some point that became coaches instead, just to change the focus. I think for a brief period of time, they were trainer mentors. I went back to, you know, like you mentioned, observer, coach, trainer. And then most recently, we've gone back to just observer, coach here. But it's very heavily dependent on that person. You know, when I was coming through as an RTU, I would always tell my team, like, hey, I've shed tears, unfortunately, during every rotation. It's just part of the experience. And sometimes that can be, you know, if the OC, you know, it feels like, at least from the RTU perspective, like, hey, they're just marking down all my mistakes. Maybe they're messing with me, you know, but, you know, obviously that's perception, or, you know, hey, they're giving me all the quote unquote right answers. But, you know, from my perspective as the RTU, you know, short on sleep, et cetera, like it's feeling impossible, to actually do, or the OC can be all the positives, you know, like when I came through here as a battalion commander, you know, my OC was definitely a coach, and she helped me get better, helped us improve our sustainment rehearsals, that kind of thing. And that influences that experience. There was an anecdote recently, I think it was attributed to Peyton Manning, the football player, you know, like, hey, sometimes you run the play, you go to the sidelines and they're showing you the video and it's all the things you did wrong. But other teams instead focus on like, hey, here's all the things you're doing right. Like, let those negative things go. and focus on the positives. So again, it's very heavily dependent on the OC and our COG or the commander of operations group. You know, he's constantly reminding us, like, hey, the day you think you can do it better than the training unit, that you need to switch hats and try it, because then you'll remember how difficult it is. The difference between that just feels like, you know, it's a storm the entire time as the RTU. But when you come through as an OC, you really get to see all the stuff that happens in the background. And so, you know, huge respect to the planners of the world and the folks that are operating, you know, they're replicating the division level during the rotation. Because, you know, things will change, you know, whether that's real world stuff, hey, bad weather comes through or something, or just, you know, the senior trainer wants to get after a different training objective. And all the work they put into trying to make it realistic so it doesn't feel like, you know, this is some kind of gamism, you know, the training unit referred to. So they put a lot of work into that. Getting to see all the backside support from the civilian team, from the garrison, all the things that they do. And then just seeing your own gaps. Like when I was at JRTC, it was the first time I was exposed to DISCA or Defense Support of Civil Authority. So that was, you know, a professional gap for me. We've had like National Guard units come through and seeing the differences in the way they do maintenance back at their home station, which is often spread across multiple states, you know, is just wildly different from what we see on the active duty side. So getting to see those gaps for yourself as an OC, hugely beneficial.
So one thing that's neat that you brought up is like just how the terminology's changed over this time period. So you're saying, so now it's, instead of just being OCT, now it's just OC.
Correct. And that's here at the NTC. I can't necessarily speak for the others. And again, that may change, you know, over the course of time. I think the intent, though, is the same regardless of the title. They just don't want people standing there with a clipboard. It's really about making the unit better. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all on the same team. So,
right. And then, so you did your time at JRTC, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And is that where that was during your captain years?
Yes. So that was coming out of company command. Went there, and then, you know, from there headed off to ILE. So got to work with as an FSC. OCT at the time, and then on the BSB battle staff side.
So pretty much between your experiences going to different CTCs as an RTU and now on the other side as OC, can only imagine how many rotations you have under your belt right now.
I think I'm approaching probably three dozen, and there are certainly other people out there that have more. But yeah, each one is a bit unique, whether you're on the player side or the OC side. Yeah, I think I'm over 30, I think, at this point.
And I bet even though you've done so many, it's going to be different every single time for you.
Oh, definitely. And some of that is just, you know, you go through in different positions. So, you know, like you said, I came out of JRTC. I'm watching BSB level battle staffs and XOs and such. And then out of ILE, I'm a battalion XO at the NTC. And it's just like, man, it is not working. I thought I had the answers, but obviously not.
So as we're just kind of talking about, you got a lot of experience when it comes to CTCs. So what trends have you seen?
Well, unfortunately, I tend to see the same trends. So I was at JRTC. This was, 2013 to 2015. So over 10 years ago. And that the same trends there are typically the same ones we see now. We may see some little bits of nuance with, you know, technology or things like that. And I would argue, like, they go back even farther. Three that I've seen, like the oldest publication I found from the Center for Army Lessons Learned is from like 1994. And three of the ones that I pulled out of there, almost word for word, were LOGSTAT submissions. That's the logistics status report. The medevac or CASEVAC planning, so as you're getting casualties off the battlefield, you know, medically or using some kind of other vehicle for CASEVAC, and then enabler support, whether that's specifically engineers or just any of the other enablers that we have nowadays, continue to be challenges.
So you're saying that even though we've been doing these rotations throughout these years, we're still seeing the same trends over and over again.
Yes. And again, it's unfortunate. And there's some reasons for that, I'm sure. But
so why do you think that we're seeing this trends?
So I'd say, first of all, and again, this is something that our boss reminds us about, like, some of these are just hard things to do. And that, you know, they're just not easy, especially in the environment that you're in. And if you stick with, you know, again, the LOGSTAT report itself, it's, you know, it takes a lot of brain power, and you're trying to do this, you know, a little bit of sleep, varying conditions. You know, I was a fan, kind of one log stat format to rule them all. We'll keep it simple. Everybody uses the same report. And at the end of my time in command after two CTC rotations, I didn't see it the same way, which doesn't mean that I have the right answer, but it's, you know, hey, the staff sergeant squad leader out there, you know, she's carrying a ruck with 60% of her body weight on her back, you know, using examples from Afghanistan of what they carried, you know, maybe got a radio, maybe one other comm system, you know, doesn't have internet connectivity, those kind of things. Like that log stat format probably doesn't need to be the thing that it needs to be for the Brigade 4 or S4 going up to the Division G4. You know, that Division G4 needs a lot more information and probably different information. And so it's hard to figure out, like, what does that look like based on, you know, the level that you're at, the mission that you're doing. And it takes thought. You know, and my team is working through, like, what is a good example right now, you know, as we've got some time between rotations. You know, I'm not a scientist, but the human default tends to be, I'm going to go for the easy thing or maybe avoid the problem. And again, like when you're short on sleep, the opposing forces are attacking your unit, it's hard to set aside that mental space. And then I'd go back to, you know, if you stick with the football example, you know, it's easy to look at them and say, man, they're really good at the, you know, kind of the peak of their pro time, you know, stick with a quarterback, maybe late 20s, early 30s. But, you know, from my perspective, that person's been throwing a football for, you know, 3+ decades at that point, you know, probably before they were even 10 years old, identified as having potential to throw a football. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of nuanced changes throughout their time that I'm ignorant of, but, you know, the size of the field, generally the same. Size of the football, generally the same. Conceptually, you know, X players on X players, length of time of the game, all those kinds of things. Whereas with the units coming through here, you know, hey, they came through as a platoon leader, and then they went through at a different CTC as a company commander with maybe a unit that was new to them. They come back through, you know, potentially another one at the field grade level, again, doing a different job, different environment. So it's hard to get the consistency where they could say, okay, this was my issue that caused this thing last time. That's one of the trends. Here's how I've corrected it for this time, because they're just, it's a completely different situation for them.
So, you know, we talked about, you know, the log stat, you mentioned some stuff with CASVAC, Medevac. Is there anything else you've seen that's been a trend from your various different experiences between being an OC or then being an RTU?
I'd say, you know, on the support unit side, and this is, again, just my perspective, so anecdotal experience, you know, from observing or going through, is the transition back to large-scale combat from counterinsurgency. Sustainment units tend to be the last ones to have done that. And some of that's probably, you know, no ill-intentioned humans. We were heavily reliant on the data that we get from others, you know, and we've kind of learned how to put that together so we can use it during the counterinsurgency years. Not all of that necessarily translates over, and we've carried some of those habits and ways of doing things. So I'd say that's one. And again, you know, we're trying to figure out what is the answer, what's realistic for a unit to be able to do in this kind of environment. But yeah, again, unfortunately, a lot of them are the same, whether it's figuring out how you get, you know, the water into the canteen for the enabler unit, like I said, you know, the casualty evacuation, you know, our medics are amazing. But then once we start talking about, you know, non-medical vehicles that we're trying to use, we tend to struggle with that. Yeah, I'd hit those.
It's like the more things change, the more they stay the same.
True statement.
So I know there's a lot of aspects that go into unit being successful in not only a CTC rotation, but truly, really any operation they're going to be faced with. This starts before a unit really even hits the ground with their planning actions. Can you walk us through planning actions, you know, with supported units?
Yeah. And I'll just, you know, I always default at this level, you know, we're dealing with, you know, brigade level teams and below. And it's the military decision-making process, and then at the company and below level, the troop leading procedures. But what we tend to see is that, you know, as units are trying to do that planning, sustainment units are not as familiar with it, most likely as your maneuver units are. And again, not bad humans. My anecdotal experience, again, in the schoolhouse is MDMP is heavily focused on, you know, a maneuver unit example. And so, you know, it's hard to translate that sometimes over to a support unit. And so, you know, like what my XOOC has done is he's worked with the folks here at the leader training program, which is it's a training iteration that units come through prior to their rotation, and they're kind of sequestered, if you will, from their home station, and they can really focus on putting together a good plan and going through those steps of MDMP, which for a lot of them, that's their first time of really doing that.
And that's at NTC?
Correct. NTC, JRTC has it as well. I believe the same for JMRC. It's again, a chance. It's about a week to 10 days to just set that time aside and go through an MDMP iteration, one or more. But again, it's hard to do when you don't have concrete examples. So if you're in an infantry battalion, you know that you are seizing an objective, destroying an objective, something like that. And there's still work involved in making the plan. But for a support unit, it can be a little trickier. And speaking from my own experience, defaulting to, such and such battalion provides sustainment support to this brigade in order to extend operational reach and endurance. You know, it was only after command and having given less than stellar mission statements like that. Like, that probably didn't help my company commanders at all with figuring out what their specific mission was for a given situation. They're trying to figure that out almost from scratch because, the things they learned, as they were junior majors with MDMP at the schoolhouse, most likely maneuver examples. And so it's hard for them to do that. But what I would offer up and what we talk to them about is like, we'll start with what are your expected missions? Like, you're going to jump from one location to another. So you can work through that. And yeah, some details on the ground will change, whether you're doing it day, night, the type of weather, et cetera. But you can at least have a framework. A lot of units will call it a playbook for how that's going to work. And you can figure out what we can do by standard operating procedure and what needs to be actually different. And that's what those staffs can then focus on. Like, hey, what are the differences? And then for support units, and really, across multiple warfighting functions. So it's not just the sustainers, but they got to do parallel planning with their higher headquarters. And we typically see units do a good job at that. Like, they don't just wait for their higher headquarters to publish the final order and then they start their planning. So they're very good about tying in early and figuring that out. And then the last thing, again, luckily, I got taught this by my instructor at the pre-command course before going into battalion command. And so I share it with the units coming through here. Is the commander has to do their part in the process. And so I had a deputy command general who pointed out to me like, hey, Eric, you got to remember you and your command sergeant major are the only folks who are, centrally selected in your entire battalion. And it's like, oh yeah, that's not one I'd really considered. Cause again, those staff captains, they're not bad humans. They're not trying to work against you, but they have, usually 10 or more years less of experience and knowledge. They haven't been to the same schools, et cetera. And so you've really got to work through, like, where I noticed that I struggled. Like, I think I visualized pretty well when you're going through that, understand, visualize, describe, direct. I think I visualized great. My description, less than stellar. And of course, my staff and subordinate commanders got the brunt of that as I was trying to work through. So that's why I talk to commanders about it when they come through here. That's something the commander has to do. And if they can describe it accurately so that the staff and subordinate units can understand it, then they're a lot better at being able to build a plan around making that thing happen.
So you just kind of really good job of highlighting, like if you're not well prepared at the beginning, even before you get there, you're not setting yourself up for success for the time out of the box.
But again, it's easy to forget that as an OC, like all the things going on at home station that take away their time, in preparing to get here. So it's, we try to remember that and give them worthwhile advice that they can go back in action.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting ready to go to NTC, but we still got gate guard. We got people out for that or whatever, red task they're in the middle of doing. The more you invest in the forefront, the better return you're going to have out there. And it's good to see. So you send units in, and that was called, the leaders?
Leaders training.
Leaders training program. About 10 days, you said?
You're right. It tends to be a week to 10 days. Yeah. Sometimes they'll add on a couple of days to do some sustainment prep specifically for the rotation. That won't be that entire audience. But yeah, usually 7 to 10 days.
Okay. And then what's usually the audience for that?
So that's sometimes you'll see company level, like commanders and first sergeants. It varies by rotation and by CTC, but it's typically battalion level and brigade level staffs, brigade level and battalion level command teams And they come out here and it's their, like I said, it's their first chance to really work through how they're going to do planning. They can get another iteration or more of MDMP. They usually get some exposure to the training area. They'll talk to their OC counterparts, that sort of thing.
Okay. So it's definitely good things to know. So when it comes to like the decision authority for sustainment leaders, like, can you kind of walk us through that from what you've experienced?
Yes, definitely. So, you know, we're looking at the tactical level. So this, you know, it may be slightly different or wildly different, you know, at operational level and above, but the tactical level, it's really like, can they align the resources, against the problem or the shortfall? And I don't really mean like the literal, like, you know, Shockley has the mental power to see where the shortfall is and send, you know, X number of trucks over there, something like that. But it's more the, when the, you know, FSC commander or BSB commander says, hey, I am taking this resource from this unit that I don't own, and I'm putting it against this problem. Like, does that actually get, you know, do people comply with that? And an example would be, you know, the support battalion gets an order like, hey, establish a task force truck, you know, quote unquote, to move an element of dismounts into position. And none of the BSBs that I've seen or been a part of have an organic troop transport element to them. They have the same, you know, tactical vehicles that everybody else has, you know, like the supply sergeant probably has a truck, your first sergeant probably has a truck. Mm-hmm. And then any other truck that they have is for something else. You know, like for me, my medical company had some of these trucks, but they were to move the treatment facility. And so, you know, if the battalion commander in that case doesn't have the authority to tell a peer like, hey, I'm taking half dozen of your trucks, I acknowledge you're going to have to dump all that stuff on the ground and it makes you less mobile. Then, you know, you haven't really given them the decision authority to solve those problems. And sometimes it's just a matter of like, we don't make it clear. You know, I refer to that as soft language.
So then what is soft language then?
It's the not being clear, not being explicit with what you're saying. And I don't know if this is exclusive to the sustainment world or not, but you know, it's the, if the convoy commander, you know, young lieutenant steps in front of the convoy for the brief, and it's like, hey, we need to make sure these loads are tied down properly. And it's like, okay, well, who is we? You know, because again, humans will default thinking like, that's, well, I guess that's somebody else. They didn't say Shockley, so Shockley's not responsible.
I always think that's so funny when you say, who's we? Yeah. One of the things my dad will always say, when I'll say, hey, we need to do something, he'll always joke and say, what, you've got a mouse in your pocket? Like, who's, like, you say, what do you mean we?
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, it's probably tied to, you know, we don't want to be unnecessarily, you know, rude or things like that, but sometimes we've got to remind ourselves, like, hey, we're in the Army. Like, we do hard things, and it's an unfortunate business we're in, and sometimes you have to be very blunt with people. So, you know, stick with that example, that same platoon leader steps up, says, okay, we're doing the convoy brief. Hey, all the truck commanders or TCs, like, you are responsible for the load on your truck being tied down properly. Like, all the TCs, raise your hand. Okay, if you're unclear on what that means, keep your hand up. Like, okay, everybody put their hands down. Then they might even ask a couple of questions like, hey, Sergeant so-and-so, what does that mean to you? But that way, hey, the driver knows, like, hey, that's not my job. My job is making sure the truck has fuel in it, making sure the tow bar is present, whatever they were told. The gunner, that's not my job. My job was to make sure I have the ammunition, my weapon is clean, all these kind of things. The TC knows, like, I am responsible for making sure this load is tied down. So again, that's how I call, or what I call, soft language. And in the sustainment world, again, just because it's hard to translate over, you know, there's the concept of using the command relationship or COMREL. You know, you're attached, you're assigned, you're under the operational control of. You can use those kind of words, and then it's very clear. We all know, like, oh, okay, got it. The distribution platoon from the forward support company has been put under the operational control of the brigade support battalion. That means this, this, and this. Instead of, hey, you know, if the BSB commander needs some of the stuff from the FSCs, then she has the authority to use it, which then people may or may not comply with.
So is this something, like, when it comes to soft language, is that something you've been seeing a lot of?
Yes. I mean, out here at JRTC as well, when I was there, and even going through as a rotational unit, you know, and again, we're probably all guilty of it. I know I am. Like, there have been times when I'll say something, you know, like when I was in battalion command, I'd give a, you know, say something to the formation and realize, you know, ideally immediately thereafter and fix it. But if not, you know, maybe a couple of days later, you know, as an anecdotal example, there was, we were going to the field And I said something along the lines of like, hey, I want everything staged by Wednesday or something like that. Or at least that's what I thought I said. And I was getting ready to, you know, dig into my company commanders until I went back to the message that I had sent out, which luckily, you know, for them was in text form. And I was able to look at it and be like, oh, I didn't actually say that. So they could have misinterpreted it. So, you know, again, I'm just as guilty as anyone of not being completely clear with like, this is what must happen. So it's a work in progress.
Part of us being leaders is just, you know, always refine ourselves, but I like how you described it as being, you know, soft language, where we need to be, you know, clear with all of our speech and being very direct so that everyone has that good understanding. And the example you put out, like, hey, when you say something, asking for that feedback, making sure they, you know, understood what you needed to get done. They said, hey, put your hands up if you still don't understand how to do it.
Which even then can be a trap, because then maybe people don't feel like they're like, yeah, it's a safe space where they can keep their hand up. So you got to be careful as a leader, you know.
Yeah, and I would say that goes back to building those bonds, building those relationships even before you hit the ground there, where you know your team, you know, you do those exercises where you're able to work with each other, you know his strengths and you know his weaknesses, so that when you do get somewhere, like you say a CTC or an operation, you know, like, okay, this person's for this part of the exercise. They know that, I know if they're acting like this, I know they didn't understand what I said. So you kind of, it's all gets back to knowing your people at the end of the day, is how I would 100%. Say it.
100%.
And then at the beginning, we talked, we brought up one of the trends was like the log stat and getting into like the data. So I imagine you've probably seen a lot of command post operations, especially sustainment fighting products. Can you walk us through what you've witnessed when it comes to those?
Yes. I'd say there's no one size fits all for command post setup, but sometimes that's a question that we'll get, you know, what should our command post look like? And like, hey, we don't have the answer. I don't know if the answer exists. And the best units focus on, you know, function over form. And it's very much, you know, how does that unit operate? How does that leader operate so that they can get things done? The form of it can vary. Obviously, there's the real world implications of, you know, the size and how that makes you targetable and things like that. So you got to consider it. But there's definitely not one real answer. And then that goes into, you know, kind of the fighting products that you use and the information that flows through there. I would refer listeners back to, I think it's FM60, Chapter 7. Covers the six functions of a command post. And then again, it's putting that mental power towards, you know, how does that look in our command post? So that's not going to give you like, this is what your command post, you know, where you need to put table one, table two, et cetera. But it does give them a starting point for like, these are the things the command post has to do. And that goes to those products. So like, sometimes you'll see, you know, the chart that shows whether the log stat has been submitted or not. And maybe in that particular case, like that's the useful piece of data that's needed. But sometimes you're just literally tracking, you know, it's a yes or no answer and there's nothing that flows from that. And sometimes, you know, or I guess a lot of the times the products or the sustainment side is really the opposite. It's form over function. You know, logisticians specifically, we love our data. We love our charts, spreadsheets, all the things. You know, and sometimes, you know, it's more of a, in my head, I would never actually say this, you know, to an RTU who's living through the challenge of the rotation, but I go back to the scene from the movie, The Dirty Dozen, where there's an honor guard out there and there's the character who's playing the role of a general doing an inspection. And he says, you know, they're very pretty, Colonel, but can they fight? You know, it's really that sort of a thing. Like, man, it's a great looking chart. What do you do with it? Your logistics common operating picture is very, very much the same. Like, it'll have all kinds of data on it. And again, looking at myself in hindsight, like what was on my COP and what was I doing with it? You know, couldn't see that in the moment. I can see it now in hindsight. Where it's like, you know, what decisions am I making? And therefore, what information do I need? And how do I depict that on the common operational picture? Again, anecdotal example. So none of the RTUs feel like it's them. Like me in my command post, I think one of the first times they set it up, there was a chart that showed like the range fans or the distances of like various indirect fire systems. Very pretty charts, lots of arcs on it. And one of them was like some kind of long range missile of like 79 kilometers or something like that. And I was like, so what's the point of this chart that's taking up, you know, 3-foot square space here in the command post. And like, well, so this way, you know, you're, if you're within the range fans or not. It's like, well, yeah, it's like 79 kilometers, man. I'm going to be within the range fans. Like, well, yeah, but you should move the BSA. It's like, I'm a brigade support battalion. I'm not going to be over 80 kilometers from my supported unit. That just doesn't work. And just at that point, it was kind of the, okay, yeah, we're not really sure why we show this. Like, yeah, I don't know either. And it disappeared. I don't know where it went. So unfortunately, sometimes we see products like that. There was a unit that came through. It was a pretty small command post, and the commander was doing that deliberately. He did not want to make it a hangout area. He even put himself, like, his workstation was outside the tent because he knew himself. And so he knew he could get drawn into some of the planning sessions, and that would actually derail the staff. So he worked like outside the tent, like sitting on his rucksack with a computer on his lap. Like, he did that to make sure that his team had the space they needed. But again, it really varies by the unit and by the mission.
I think one of the things you brought up was like, oh, it's not a one size fits all, because it's all about form over or function over form. And I'll give the typical catch all Met TC dependent.
Very much so.
But yeah, I know it's just always a catch all answer when we go over these things. But I know it's true. I mean, everything's going to be so different on how a unit sets up. And I know in today's world, we're seeing a lot when it comes to technology and all these new systems and such when it comes to data. Like, we're doing all this data-driven sustainment right now. And it goes back to, hey, you can have all the data in the world you want, but if you're not doing anything with it, like you were just talking about, then it becomes so much noise, this white noise that distracts you. One thing I kind of want to get after or ask you about this is, are you seeing units doing both analog and these systems? Are they just going straight systems and forgetting about analog now? Like, what have you been seeing with that?
It's really a combination. And again, it's knowing yourself. Like, I'm someone who's a bit of an anachronism, and I kind of anchor to analog, but I've seen the value that the digital side can provide. Especially when you start talking the amount of data flow that's coming through. So most units, whether they're successful at it or not, at least try to do both. And again, some of that is just the knowledge that goes with it. It's, hey, it's very easy when it's getting fed in the system and it's automated, and then transferring that to an analog product can be a bit difficult, especially if you're in the move between one location to another location, like catching all that up. You know, it's a lot harder to manage all that information. You get the reality of, you know, somebody rubbed up against the dry erase board and erased part of it, or, you know, they didn't pass the word over to the battle captain. And sometimes you get a leader, you know, the SPO or the battalion commander, it's literally them in front of the workstation, almost being like a super RTO, so they can try to keep up. And again, it goes back to not bad humans, but they just don't have the training at that level. And I would argue some of that is talent management. You know, in the sense of, you know, earlier in my career, it seemed like when we went on a mission, we had like 100% plus of people. And, you know, much more recently, it seems to be common across the board, you're entering these training rotations or even real world deployments significantly lower than that. And at that point, like, every single person matters. And you got to make some hard decisions about, like, where you put people. Because having a great RTO can be hugely impactful, positive or negative, if they're not a great RTO. So again, that's usually the thing that sets units apart for being able to do both. A lot of them will go digital with a lot of things just because that's where the information flow is. But most of them are trying to do both.
Yeah, for me, I've always been, you know, big analog person, mostly because I just like, well, if the system fails, hey, we lose power, generator dies, or, you know, electronic warfare or something, we lose these systems. I want to make sure we can still operate and still have that training. Well, I love the digital systems. They offer so much efficiency, still be able to know how to do it analog when need to be.
Yeah.
One thing you talk about with the RTO, and I think it's something for units to be aware of, is like, so I've seen it before. They'll just stick some random, you know, stick a random private as RTO, or just somebody random, and then information can get lost. Any good thoughts on what could make a good RTO or how to balance that for a unit?
Yes, I will steal an idea from one of my peers when I was in command. What they did, they were an infantry battalion, but you can do the same thing. It doesn't make it exclusive to them, but they actually had a competition, And so that was a, like, that was a, I don't know what you would call it, but like a position of choice or something like that, a highly, you know, not sought after.
Prestigious.
Prestigious, that's the word. Thank you. And so, like, they actually had like a tryout kind of thing, you know, and I think they probably did something similar at the company level, like, hey, we're going to send somebody up to be the RTO, you know, who's interested. Obviously, the leader's got to generate some interest in that. But then you at least get somebody that wants to be there. And then it's the training side. So it's one thing to be able to physically work the system. But like an RTO, battle captain, battle NCO, like, man, if you got good folks there, they can really make money for you to be able to, you know, to pick out, especially again, with all the data streams going on, like, hey, our adjacent battalion X just reported this thing. That sounds like something I might need to let the SPO know about. And the SPO finding out, you know, at 02 in the morning can start working an action instead of, you know, at the update brief 7 hours later, you know, maybe someone like, hey, wasn't there a message like such and such and no one else is tracking it? That again, they can really pay off. So that was something that I unfortunately just didn't put the effort in to try to get there. I was in the last few months of my command, but seeing my peer do that, I was like, that's a really great idea for getting the right people in there.
I like that a lot. I'm gonna put that in my toolkit to steal one day, hopefully when I'm a battalion commander, just to be able to, I like that. So, and it kind of gets after my next question is like, when it comes to combat skills for support soldiers, like how can we be more lethal?
So many ways. And unfortunately it's, they don't get a lot of training time. I think every sustainment leader out there will know that. And so it's really, you got to maximize the time that you do have because you got to do a real world job. It's the same out here during a rotation. So we use the word adjudicate. Sometimes when you have to, you know, something's not really happening, but you have to determine like what would be a realistic outcome of a given situation, like a drone, you know, drops a munition on a convoy, but none of the instrumentation system activates. And so it's like, well, who's a casualty, et cetera. So then we have to go through and we call that adjudicating, like, okay, we think it would be 2 vehicles, 4 casualties of this type. But I tell the support units, like, I can't adjudicate a meal into a soldier's belly or, you know, fuel into the tank of a vehicle and make it go. Like, if it's out of fuel, it's out of fuel. And so there's real world stuff we have to do, which, you know, means that there's less training time. So it's maximizing that. But some of the specifics of it, I'd say you got to embrace austerity. You know, I'm a big fan of throwing away the cots. They got to sleep in the dirt. They got to eat MREs. They got to do some of those hard things. I know, you know, Colonel Agnes, the commandant, he was on there, I think a couple months ago. He was the commander of 6th Battalion, 2 SFAB, if I remember right. And I think their motto at that time was everybody fights. And so that stuck with me, even though I wasn't in the unit. Like, yeah, that's true. Like, everybody's got to know their weapon system, how to use it. You know, if you're the machine gunner, you got to be able to talk machine gun theory. You know, if you're a squad leader, you know, you should be taking your squad through the arms room, you know, as frequently as you can, doing dry fire drills, you know, barrel change drills for the machine guns. You can go out, you know, do a PT run into the training area and work through some hypothetical engagement area development, those kind of things. But I think that would help. And for leaders, you know, and really that's, I mean, if you're a battle buddy team that's stranded by yourself, then you got to think this way, but it's what's the enemy's perspective? You know, how is he looking at me? How is he going to try to exploit me? What are his most likely avenues of approach? And then how can I respond to that? Again, some of the transition we've seen when I was a JRTC, you know, part of the BSA or Brigade Support Area setup would be putting up triple standard concertina wire, encircling the entire BSA. And that's a lot of work. You know, the soldiers out there often in the heat or the humidity, you know, putting that wire in, and in this environment now where the BSA is jumping, you know, every 48 or more hours or more frequently, it's just, you know, is it worth it? But then sometimes that defaults to like, well, we just won't put up any because we don't know what to do with it. And it's like, no, man, like there's a technique. You got to figure out most likely avenues of approach. You got to figure out how you want to force the enemy into your engagement area so you can kill them. And then you put the obstacles there, whether that's wire or something else. So knowing how to do that. Another one would be like for the medics, they love to have their Red Crosses displayed. You know, probably not as much of an issue down at the Joint Readiness Training Center, but like here at the National Training Center, like you can see for miles. And so I'll go up to them like, hey man, I know the Geneva Conventions, but you're just telling the enemy like, here I am. And so unless you're actively transporting a patient, and obviously it's up to their commander, you know, what risk he or she wants to take on, but like, what's the point in showing those Red Crosses? You know, they're foldable for a reason. So you can cover them up. But the, you know, they just don't, they're not thinking about that aspect. And again, to their credit, they're thinking about, you know, treating casualties and making sure they get back in the fight. But they got to really think about it from the enemy perspective.
Yeah, I think that's a good one to bring up, because like, I guess being out of NTC, you really can't see for miles and miles, and that bright red spot will definitely stand out pretty well out there.
Yes.
So it's definitely a different mindset to get into to think about. So I know right now there's a lot of units that are going through, you know, transformation and contact right now. Have you been having any of those units come to NTC? Have you, like, what kind of things have you observed?
We've had a couple come through, variety as far as at what level they were going through. Some of them primarily focused on the technological aspect. Some of them also doing some organizational changes as well and trying out new concepts. In addition to that, it's been interesting from, you know, probably like a professional curiosity perspective, you know, and just seeing them work through these things. I think a lot of it is, you know, we tend to focus on the technological side, but again, there's those other aspects to it. And then as, you know, as we've been reminded by senior leaders, like, it's very easy, like, well, you know, but we didn't have the time to do this and this before coming out here. Like, no, it's transformation in contact. It's while you're doing all the things, like, that's the whole idea. And not taking those deliberate pauses, like, we got to do this in real time. And so seeing how they work through that, if nothing else, has been just, you know, motivating to me, you know, as someone in the Army, and just seeing those units work through it, getting to see some of the, you know, the changes that happen, and how they're really like building the assessments to make sure, like, hey, we tried this new formation, you know, we organized it differently and it failed. But why did it fail? Was it truly like that organizational design doesn't work? Or was it, hey, the tech to support that design doesn't exist yet? Or the training scenario that we designed didn't really test it to its full extent. And so what we saw looks like failure. So seeing that work has been interesting. And then just, you know, at the lowest level, the soldier ingenuity, you know, some of the specific things they've done with the tech. And it's really just, it's more the, you know, as I get older, easy to downplay the, you know, the latest generation. I'm sure the same thing was said about me and my peers when we came in. But these folks they're just as motivated as anybody else. They're just as invested. And so seeing that, you know, their commitment to it, has just been, you know, invigorating or motivating.
It'd be nice to see all the ingenuity, you know, from the different soldiers out there who are taking all this new equipment, new technology. Okay, well, this is what we're given. Like, well, we can even adapt it to do this now. Yeah. So just to see the ingenuity has got to be amazing. And as we kind of pivot our conversation here, what good tips or tricks? I know you probably get this all the time, but like if someone's coming to NTC,
do get it all the time. And unfortunately, sometimes we just give them platitudes, you know, do command maintenance, that kind of thing. And so we've worked to move away from that. You know, our boss has given us guidance, like, hey, let's provide them actionable feedback. And so one of the things I talk about, and some of this is based on my own experience and failing to do the things, is they've got to, you know, task organized for combat is kind of the catchphrase. Like I said, you know, before, like finding that RTO or that battle captain, like, there are going to be winners and losers. And, you know, most of the leaders that I've met throughout my career, they're not trying to deliberately just pilfer talent to make their own headquarters, you know, more robust and run more easily. But again, going back to that command post discussion, as they're looking at that, or they can even translate it over to garrison operations. You know, like for me, I wish I'd have done better with finding the person that handled unit onboarding, and that could have had some positive impacts on me, which my command sergeant major suggested early on. So for the leaders out there, you know, maybe take the advice of your senior enlisted advisor. But figuring out, like, hey, in my command post, I have to have someone who can do this function. And if you don't have that person, and it may not necessarily be like a billet, like a battle captain or battle NCO or S3, you know, NCO or something like that, it may be something you're creating, but they perform this function. And the best person for that in our unit is so-and-so platoon leader down in the distribution company. And that's the only platoon leader down there. Like, they're short, all the other ones, they've got a brand new XO, you know, something like that. And it hurts to take their one remaining platoon leader, but the positive impact that you see happening for the battalion, you know, at the end of the day is probably worth it. You know, another one's probably like your liaison officer or LNO, like a good LNO can do things for you if they're properly trained and resourced, that'll pay off at the end. And again, that may be, you know, a lot of units now have very junior platoon sergeants, you know, staff sergeants or even buck sergeants. And so to take, you know, maybe the one of maybe only one sergeant first class from a company to be an LNO. But if you know, like, hey, that's the person, like, hey, she's got people skills, she can network over there with this other unit that's supporting us, all those kind of things, that can be it. The second one is probably more for the junior leaders, you know, kind of platoon level and below. And that's like, be ready to do your job. You know, sometimes we'll see units, they're in the brigade support area. We'll get to the AAR, you know, the after action review is like, well, you know, battalion or company, they're always giving us these last minute missions. And it's like, well, hey man, like, you're the platoon leader for the distribution platoon in a forward support company. Like, do you think it's possible that your higher headquarters might give you a mission to distribute stuff with your trucks in your platoon that are built for distribution? Like, well, yes. And so, like, if they just get up every day, conduct stand to, and then immediately go into priorities of work, hey, let's maintain our vehicles, let's maintain our weapons. Hey, we got no mission yet. Let's go through some rehearsals. Let me go over there and talk to the, you know, the distribution platoon from a different forward support company. Like, hey, you went to this area last night. We haven't been to that area. What's the route like, et cetera. And then, you know, midday, they get a mission like, hey, you got to get ready to go in 2 hours. Instead of complaining about, well, now I don't have time to do maintenance, I don't have time to do PCIs or pre-command inspections, those kind of things. Instead, instead, you're just focused on the specifics of that mission. You can go into the, you know, the troop leading procedures, you can go into the rehearsals just for that mission, and then you go execute. So if you take an active mindset and like, hey, my job is X, the American taxpayer's paying me to do that job, like, I should do my job. I think that can help make units successful.
Which is just cut that little smit bitch of all this, and that would just be perfect episode by itself. Just get off just all the tips and tricks for getting out there. And it's going to be interesting because I'll be asking this to every CTC just to see the different perspectives. But it's true, like, they're just, you know, training up. So much of it is just about all that pre-train that you do, putting the right people in the right spots prior to getting there is going to really help you be successful.
Yeah.
One of the last questions I got is, say I'm someone and I just got assigned to be an OC out at one of these CTCs. What a good advice do you have for someone who just got assigned to be an OC?
I would circle back to, you know, like what I said, my commander mentioned to us, and he reminds us of, like, hey, you know, you gotta, you know, the day you think you can do it better, you got to switch places. And so what I tell people is, you got to stay humble. It's very easy to think, you know, within the first two or three rotations, you've got all the answers, and you forget that you've got, you know, a radio with an earpiece, and you're listening to this whole network of people, provide perspectives. You know, you're not the one who's doing the thing. You know, as my XO tells the unit when they come through for LTP, it's like, hey, we're not the enemy. We've just got a perspective that's probably informed by a little more sleep than you've had. You know, we've probably eaten proper meals. We've been able to clean up, you know, we're trying to help you out. So staying humble and remembering, like, it could just as easily be you. I'd say that first. There will be some downtime, like, outside of the rotations. And certainly, you know, invest in your family, invest in yourself, but also invest, and really that's your primary thing you should invest in, is honing your craft as a warfighting professional. You know, so you should walk away from that assignment, hey, I learned more about, whether it's multifunctional logistics, like, hey, I'm a 92 Fox by trade. I learned about how 92 Alphas operate. I learned how 88 Mics operate, you know, different things like that, so that you can contribute to your next unit. And then the last one would just be, you know, see the positives in the location. So, you know, I've been at both of these here, so can only speak to those here in the continental United States, you know, both typically seen as being in less than desirable locations. But I had a great time in Louisiana. Like, I'm not much, you know, for necessarily some of the outdoor activities, but great opportunity for that down there. You know, I enjoyed just the environment itself, and the people in the local community were some of the nicest that I've ever engaged with. So it's about finding those positives. And then out here, you know, it's beautiful here in the Mojave. If you're willing to see it, you got some really great proximity to some great urban areas, you know, whether that's here in Southern California, if you go over to Vegas, if that's your thing, you know, there's a lot of outdoor stuff you can do here as well, within, you know, pretty short distance. And so it's really just making the best of it instead of focusing on, like, hey, it feels like we're in the middle of nowhere. You know, here at the NTC, we say we're in the middle of nowhere, but we're also in the middle of everything. So I'd stick with those three things, but probably first and last, like, you got to stay humble.
Well, thank you for that, sir. Is there anything else that we missed today that you wanted to highlight to the community?
Nothing I can think of. I think it's been a good conversation from my perspective. I appreciate the time again.
So then what advice then do you have for the sustainment community?
Yeah, this may make me unpopular, but I would say, like, as sustainers, like, don't believe your own hype. You know, and it's great when leaders come down and they hype up, you know, whether it's the SSA or the things that the sustainment team is doing at various levels. And hey, I appreciate that there's a lot of hardworking sustainers out there that are doing good things for the country. But we got to remember, like, we are extremely important. So are the other warfighting functions and the things they've got to get done. And so we are just part of the puzzle. And so, you know, ultimately we're here for the people out there pulling triggers, doing what they need to do for the Army. I'm reminded of, I don't know if you call it a poem or a bit of prose, but it was, I think, anonymous, you know, what is a veteran? And one of the lines in it talks about, you know, the vet is the career quartermaster who watches the ribbons and medals, you know, pass them by throughout their entire career. And it's not just about, you know, that aspect as far as, like, hey, it's about the warfighter. It's even beyond that, like, just on a personal note, like, hey, if your self-worth is coming from, you know, your job title or some, you know, positive thing that a leader said about how important you are, like, there's more to you than that. Like, you are a unique individual, and your self-worth should be coming from inside. So when all that stuff is gone, you still know that you did a good job, because the glory is going to go to those out there, as it should, who are on the front lines. And for those of us that are supporting them, like, we've got to take satisfaction in doing the best we can for them. So I would say, don't believe your own hype. It's probably what I would say to the sustainment community.
I love that, sir. That is a good way to look at it. Definitely a good way to keep yourself humble. So this has been just a really great conversation to kick off this mini series that we're doing. And just, I know we could continue to talk for hours, especially from the NTC perspective. When it comes to any different operation at any of the CTCs. But I know there's going to be some cards and letters. People want to maybe have some follow-up questions. Maybe there is someone out there that's a brand new or about to come to you as an OC. They might have questions, or a unit that, hey, you know, they might have some additional follow-up questions. So where can they find you at then?
That would be awesome. Again, we're on the same team. We want the RTU to be successful. You know, as I tell them, when they come through, it's much more fun doing the after action review and saying, like, hey, you tried this, it didn't work, here's why we think it didn't work, instead of like, man, you guys are bad at these basic things. It's much more fun to do that. So again, we're on the same team. So people can find me on global, just eric.p.shockley, Eric with a C. I think I'm one of the only ones in there. Pretty sure I'm definitely the only one here at the National Training Center. So yeah, that's probably the best way to find me.
Perfect. So I just wanted to really thank you, sir, for taking the time to meet me virtually today to provide our audience with just really so much wisdom and information. Just truly, sir, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Garrett. And again, thanks for what you're doing there, you know, with the Harding Project. I know you're blazing the trail for the folks who'll come after you. And it's really, you know, like we talked about before, this was just, you know, the work you're putting in will make things easier for the rest of us. And then just the conversation that you have going across the board on multiple topics is really a positive contribution. So thanks for having me on, and thanks for what you're doing.
Of course, sir. And thank you for the kind words. I enjoy what I'm doing right now. I always say, I never thought in a million years that I'd be doing a podcasting for the Army, but here I am. And it's truly been a blessing in my life. I know we're just getting started right now with these conversations, as we're going to be exploring each of the major CTCs. So stay tuned, be on the lookout, as we're going to then move forth at from the GRTC perspective, the JMRC perspective, and also the JPMRC perspective. So a lot of different CTCs that we're going to be exploring out there. So please stay tuned and stay with us along this journey as we continue to increase our lethality. But that is all we have today, folks. As always, Sustainment Leaders start here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.